Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles, but we still here, finna build here, up coin tail pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black on black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fuck me promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles, but we still here, finna build here, up coin sale pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, cause that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit that don't tolerate it, melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack upped up another conversation, Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
He has labored, he has suffered to lead his people into the land of freedom. He is the Redeemer and he has labored, he has suffered to lead his people into the land of freedom. He is the Redeemer and he has labored, he has suffered to lead his people into the land of freedom. He is the Redeemer and he has labored, he has suffered to lead his people into the land of freedom. He is the Redeemer and he has labored.
And welcome back to the Mother of All Talk Shows, Elijah and Elijah, live on Pan-African Television. We apologize for that break in transmission. We lost power. Yeah, the lights went out, simply put. Well, we're discussing the issue of the World Bank Country Director's comments. So let me allow Elijah, who is the last person speaking on that topic, to conclude so that we can move on to other issues.
In fact, whoever has put the lights off, those that we can be stopped. The World Bank and their representative, is it the IMF for the World Bank representative in Ghana? Pierre Laponte.
Yeah, World Bank representative.
Good. He said, well, it's half Ukraine, Russian war, placating the government, and half issues other than domestic issues. Now, they are not prepared to listen to that, but I will remind them. This is what John Dramani Mahama said. And they should tell me which of that is not true. He said, the consequences of the government's ill-advised policies such as the botched, insensitive, and dubious cost in closing down locally owned banks, unbridled levels of corruption, and lack of accountability, including mismanagement of COVID-19 funds, unconventional borrowing practices riddled with opaqueness and conflicts of interest, resulting in an unsustainable debt envelope, costly experimental and tested programs, and so on, cannot be ignored in understanding the current dire state of the Ghanaian economy. And whoever is listening, which of what John Dramani Mahama has said is not true? So, we are in this together. The problem is that when accountability in Ghana, especially political accountability, is always put regime accountability. And let no one say that if there's a regime change, and there's a close regime accountability, that will be witch hunting. I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you, Alaji. Let me do a few messages since we've been on for a while, and then we can move on to the next issue. This is
Tony Gavuzini. That's his name. Says good morning. I've so far admired the former, I think he meant to say, former deputy organizer of the MPP on Alaji and Alaji. He has been forthright, and whatever he has said is on point. That's Tony Gavuzini. There's Tafai Nama here, who is also joining us. So now, my brother from Nadoli has spoken well. I believe this is how politicians must be speaking regarding the things that affect our nation. Kudos to him. So now, I tell him to go to Nadoli and register to join the only party that cares for good people of this country, which is NDC. And since he has tried for so long to go to parliament, he will get the opportunity as member of the NDC. Inshallah, he should try my advice. And Okay. So Tafai Nama here says today is his birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Some more messages. Musa Batwa is also joining us. Says, join us from Asawa. Says, Kufu Addo Mbaumia should be blamed for current economic quagmire. We find ourselves, it's as a result of mismanagement and corruption. However, since the establishment of IPAC, political parties and civil society organizations have been offering proposals for electoral reform to EC. Now to strengthen our democratic system, but it appears in Mensa and Bosman Asari are questionably changing the status quo. The IPAC is gradually becoming a rubber stamp, but they should be mindful of the consequence therein after. God save Ghana. That's coming from Musa Batwa. E.D. Gideon Mutari is also joining us. Says a good morning. It is getting disgusting and tiresome discussions of our problems as Ghanaians, since our misleaders are unwilling to listen, nor act prudently to inure to the benefit of the larger population of Ghana. My worry has to do with the fact that our president continuously lives large, even though there's a loud cry by Ghanaians to stop him from this act. They should stop the frivolous excuses of using COVID, Russia, invasion of Ukraine, etc., which I deem as an insult to an intelligence. as a people, Ghana must work again and change is imminent. There's also Ambassador Sampiale who's joining us. So now, the fact of a junk country has been established beyond all reasonable doubt. The NDC warned this government, but they did not listen. Now, the problem is beyond just talking about it. The NDC should now exhibit the capacity to resolve the problem now. We should prove to Ghanaians that we have what it takes to turn the economy round and grow it soundly. Let's start, because the NDC has human and technical capability to do so. Before I forget, he also says, on behalf of the Central Committee and entire membership of NDC Pro Forum, I wish to congratulate the Right Honorable Alban Sumana Bagbin. I wish the Right Honorable Alban Sumana Bagbin a happy birthday. We thank God for giving us such a unique statesman and selfless son. That's coming from Ambassador Sampiale. Hadi Pickfam, the Nanado Bawumia government has lost its credibility with respect to economic management. Government is about honesty and truthfulness. The Nanado Bawumia government, however, fancy blatant lying to the good people of Ghana. They promise to transform our economy, and today all we see is the free fall of the city, skyrocketing fuel prices and galloping inflation. Instead of the government to stay true to themselves and admit their failures, they keep shifting blames on external issues while preaching to Ghanaians that things will get better. If a bachelor lies that he's married, he's only deceiving his manhood. That is coming from Hadi Pickfab. And then let me end with Abbas Amogobo in Ofinsu. The problem of this Akufo-Addo government is its inability to fight the unprecedented corruption of its appointees. Everybody is just grabbing. In some prisons, Kumasi prisons and others must just be expanded after the 2024 election. So those are some of the messages you're sending to us on our very first topic of discussion. If you're just joining us, welcome back. Mother of all talk shows, Elijah. My name is Sena Numbu. I'm in the studio. We're starting from my left. Honorable Mohammed Sukwaro, who is Member of Parliament for Sisala West. Sitting by him is Alhaji Nusa Fuseni, a former Member of Parliament for Tamale Central, a private individual now, who is very hard hit by the economic situations we are confronted with. Everybody is. And then very close to him is Dede Boateng. I wanted to be sure. I've decided to leave out the English name because women are particular about the pronunciation of the English names. I can say Dede Boateng. That one is... Teresa.
Yes.
Yes. No. Boateng. And all these water is hitting my head. Well, so that's the panel that we have this morning. We are moving on to the discussion of the issue of Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. I'll start from my left with Honorable Sukwaro. And I apologize. We have 20 minutes to go, which means you have 5 minutes on that particular issue. It should be very brief. We have 20 minutes to go. Unless I have different instructions.
We are coming to speak about the only founder of this.
Yes, I understand. But I'm also working with time.
And you know, we are talking about the founder of Ghana.
Yes. So, but you have to manage
for anyway. Thanks very much once again, Sena. Speaking about Dr. Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah, I'm always happy anytime his name is mentioned, because many of the infrastructure that we can boast of as a country, well, I wasn't born then, but per what I was taught in school and also read about him, indicates to me that most of those things came about during his era. When you speak about the Tamamoto Weyakosombo Dam and several other factories, not as we are experiencing today, not as we are experiencing under this government called One Disrupt, we are talking about proper factories that created jobs, and the production people can still feel the impact of those factories. And being the founder, if any other person has a different view about who the founders or the founder of this country is, I believe, and I know many people agree with me, that we have one founder, which is Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. He founded Ghana. I read about him and per what we were taught in school. indicated to me in 1947 when UGCC was formed by Pa Grant, that is George Grant. The current president's uncle, J.B. Dankwa, Akwaje Nku, were part, and when Nkrumah was in U.S. then, also, I think he was a leader for the African students then in U.S., where he even established African Secretariat, and the purpose of that Secretariat was to fight for African liberation, even in U.S. So they brought him to come and join them, and he was made the General Secretary of the UGCC, and because of different political ideologies, he, Nkrumah, at the time, even before he was brought in to come and join the UGCC, he had that, vision in him about liberating Africa, and for that matter, Ghana then, that he was for independence. He thought, or he said at the time, that we were capable of managing our own affairs, and so we needed to be given the opportunity as people to manage our affairs. So he was always, advocating for independence. And the likes of J.B. Dankwa and his group were also of the view that we were not ready for independence. And so out of that, they broke away. That was why he left to form CPP, the Convention People Party. And so he contested in the 1951 election, where he won almost all the seats. I think 34 out of 38 seats were won by the CPP government. And so, at the 1952, the UGCC was dissolved. There wasn't the party called UGCC. Mm-hmm. And so, Nkrumah was made the Prime Minister from 1952 to 1956, where he finally got the independence. And so, when he was to address the gathering at the Polo Court then, he was surrounded by some individuals, and Nathaniel, there's a name, I forgot some of the names. Those people that surrounded him at the podium, per history, and what I've learned, I didn't see any name like J.B. Dankwa as is being purported today as those that are part of the founding fathers of this country. So I strongly think that the current president is only trying to, distort the history of this nation just to give certain credence to his uncle J.B. Dankwa, who shouldn't be so. We know that the history, it is only Nkrumah who fought and founded this country, supported by his people, the CPP people, because that's the only first political party that led this country in 1967. And so the question I ask myself, if today the President of the Republic is saying that there are several people who fought for the independence, which includes his uncle, J.B. Dankwa, we've had 11 different presidents since independence. That is only this time that he, Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, is the president of this country, that he is saying to the people of Ghana that it is not only Nkrumah who founded this country. There were several other people, including his uncle. Is he telling me, under the regime of His Excellency the former president, J.A. Kufuor, they already know of this history? Is he telling me, under the regime of late President John Rawlings, he didn't know that, or they were not all aware of this history? Is he telling me all the many other presidents we've had, none of them? It is only he, Nana Addo, when he became president, that he said it wasn't only Nkrumah who founded this country, but rather many other people, including his uncle. Therefore, the history must be rewrite. And so, it is only out of, hatred per history, just as his uncle and his group didn't like Nkrumah, that hatred has been transferred to his generation to ensure that the legacy of Nkrumah is being attacked, which we and many other people, including yourself, I know,
we will not sit and allow our history to be distorted by the current president. He can choose to say anything about his uncle, his political career, how he started forming UGCC and all of that. But to say that his uncle and his group were part of the founding fathers of this country, I disagree with him. We only have one founder, and which is Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. I just said that Nkrumah broke away from UGCC to form CPP. After the 1951 elections, 1952, UGCC, where J.B. Dankwa and Co. were with, that's their political party, was dissolved. 1957, it was under the leadership of Nkrumah, CPP, which J.B. Dankwa wasn't a member of CPP. All the many other people he's mentioning as part of founding fathers of this country, none of them, they were not part of CPP. So how, I'm just struggling to today. For example, my brother sitting here, but is not a member of NDC. And so I am a member of NDC. I know in 2024, inshallah, NDC will win the election. So after winning the election, if in the future somebody wants to talk about the people who were members of NDC in 2024 election, who fought for the victory to liberate this country from the current hardship, I don't think the person would say that he voted was part because he also belongs to a certain political party at that time. He was fighting for a different ideology and certainly not for the interests of NDC. And so there's no way that the president's assertion that the founder is more than one person, and starting from the UGCC, the formation of UGCC to 1957, all those people are supposed to be celebrated. How can we celebrate people who were not ready for independence? They were not ready. At the time, Nkrumah was saying that independence now, they will say independence later. They're not ready. So how do you want us to celebrate them as part of people who fought for our independence? When they were seen against it, they didn't even hide it. And so sometimes I wonder how politicians be trying to rewrite the history without even thinking about our own integrity, how the world will see us. You travel outside this country. When you mention that you are coming from Ghana, the only person they remember when it comes to our independence, my uncle is here. You can testify yourself. It is Nkrumah, Ghana. I've never heard anywhere that J.D. Dankwa is Ghana. Oh, yes. I've never heard it. Anywhere you go, when you mention Ghana, the question that, Nkrumah is Ghana, nobody will ask you, are you coming from J.D. Dankwa is Ghana? Wikipedia can go. All these things are written. So how many Ghana is almost 60? How many years? 60. We are 60 plus. So is the president telling us that right from 1957 up to 2019, there was no one in this country? I just said that we've had 11 different presidents, head of state. Nobody saw this mistake. It is only he, Nanado.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Elvis. Yes, but before I come, this is Mark Doe, who usually watches us from Alajo. So now, is Elvis a real MPP person? I've been listening to him on other sister stations, and his analysis are very different from other MPP communicators like Solomon. As for the economy, you don't need a prophet to tell you the state of it. If there's any greed after great sea, I don't think that can be used to describe Ghana's economy.
Sana, these our viewers will let them finally sack me from this, my party. I am NPP. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
I have always maintained that it is important for us to engage in opposing partisan politics. Reason, being that whether you are in the governing party or in the opposition, you have a role. In fact, opposition parties must even have better role to put government on check to make sure the right thing is done. But the most important thing is that much as I may love my party and much as you may love yours, it is important that we love Ghana beyond our individual political parties. And it is why I don't do propaganda. And you realize that the difference is clear when the others speak. But let me address the issue of, is it Nkrumah what? As a founder of Ghana. Okay, so Sena, it all started, and I'm not speaking for 5 minutes. It all started many years ago. The struggle for independence for the people of the Gold Coast have never been an issue without history. In fact, a lot of little things happened, starting from the formation of the Aboriginal Rights Protection Society, then later the Fanti configuration, and then all of that happened. But there was a scale where the momentum of our independence struggle took up a more serious and formidable front. Undoubtedly, beyond the Aboriginal Rights Society and the Fanti configuration, nobody can deny UGCC as having had a visionary role, at least in creating an organized front for the struggle for independence. There's no debate about it. In fact, in the wisdom of, and I choose my words carefully, George Grant, otherwise popularly called Pa Grant, this is the true founder of the UGCC, the United Gold Coast Convention, not J.B. Dankwa. The true founder. No, I'm not even rebutting you, so just read your phone. Yes. The true founder, Pa Grant. Then others such as J.B. Dankwa, who later was representing the UGCC and its vision in what has become largely the Eastern Region today. So maybe you may want to call him the Eastern Regional Chairman, even though we didn't have a region called Eastern Region then. You know, but as part of that belt, he was coordinating affairs. And so clearly, in 1947, after all of this, there was a need to call up Ghanaians in the diaspora who would be able to add momentum to the fight. And so, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, a young revolutionary activist of great Pan-Africanism, in the United States, who later studied after Pennsylvania, went to, London School of Economics and Political Science, was invited over on the recommendation of one other great man in this country, Ebenezer Akwaje. He's the man they named the Akwaje Interchange after, in Osu. He recommended, and so Dr. Kwame Nkrumah came over under the sponsorship of J.B. Dankwa then to be General Secretary. But let me now go back to what happened immediately afterwards. We cannot tell this history without giving praises to what our chief did. You remember the then the chief of Osu? I think in private life, he goes with the name something Taylor. I'm talking about the chief, the Gachief, Bonnie the Ted. He organized and led demonstrations against high inflation of European imported products that impose hardship on Ghanaians. And the aftermath of that particular rioting in January 1948 sharply resulted into our ex-servicemen who fought in the Second World War and were denied payment of their allowances to match up in a peaceful unarmed protest in demand for their monies. That is what is popularly called the 1948 riots. Whereupon, on the 28th of February, these harmless veterans were shot, leading to the death of three people. In fact, four people, but three known, three identified people. One is, I think, Sergeant Ajete, Corporal Atipo, and Private Odate Lampe. There was a fourth person who till date nobody has been able to recognize, not his name, not his family. And so if you go to the Christiansburg Road where we have the Freedom Square, you realize that the statue, there is one without a headless statue. It represents that unknown hero. This is the reality. So it gave momentum to the struggle. The leaders of the political front, then UGCC, were arrested after a commission of inquiry blamed them for being the cause. That was where Dr. Kwame Nkrumah was first arrested as the leader, followed by J.B. Dankwa, Edgar Akufo-Addo, who is father of the current president, Obi Chebilampe, and Ebenezer Kwaje, and the others, forming the Big Six. There were six in number. Shortly after their release from jail, after a month, what did we record in history? History recorded that there was a commission of inquiry at the instance of the Queen of England. And what happened? That gave to rise the COSI committee. The COSI committee had to probe into the happenings in the political front of Africa and Ghana in particular at the time. Especially so when the Watson report had overthrown, I think, the 1946 constitution, saying it did not take into consideration the plight of local indigents. Then the Queen saw need to lay path for a new constitution for us and a new leadership. And so it was where the betrayal among the brotherhood started. When they in the heat of that event, a lot of the people denied that even having a hand in the direct organization of the riots and the series of confusions calling for independence. They all went behind the scenes and blamed Dr. Kwame Nkrumah for it. And Nkrumah came out and said, yes, if they say I am the cause, then indeed I am the cause. So who founded Ghana? Because that is where the foundation for the formation of Ghana as a country started. Now, let us move into 1951. The COSI committee's report now indicated that let us in the National Assembly have a true representation of the people. The National Assembly, then comprising of 84 seats, of which 38 out of the 84 were to be electable positions. And that was the first ever universal suffrage that was held on the continent of Africa. Nkrumah was then, let us not forget, in jail at the, I think, Fort James. I'm sure Honorable Mr. Hussein will correct me if I am wrong. While in prison, he contested on the ticket of his CPP after the series of confusions where he felt betrayed and was like, okay, let's fight these Europeans all out for independence. Now, the other leaders of the UGCC said, no, let's not fight for independence now. Let us fight for independence in the shortest possible time. So now, my question that comes is, what was the definition of shortest possible time? Even Jesus Christ, in divine books, his shortest possible time of return is over 2,000 years now. So in complying with the shortest possible time, it actually means that we could have been there for another 15 years without independence, and we would still be able to classify it as a shorter time. But no, Nkrumah said now, and projected them now to a space of not exceeding 10 years and won independence in 9 years after the 51 election, which CPP was the only party that presented candidates for all the 38 contestable seats. Nkrumah himself contesting the Accra Central municipal seat, which he won. Not in Zuma seat, Accra Central seat, which he won out of goodwill while in jail. In fact, Kojo Mbosio was the only parliamentary candidate then who went unopposed for the Winneba seat. Let's talk history. That's the only way we can liberate this country. And then Gbedema, who was special aide for Nkrumah, credited for organizing the election across, won a seat himself, and at the end of the day, the CPP won a total of 34 out of 38 seats. The UGCC won 2 out of the total. And I think we are 2 independent candidates. Now, it was upon that victory that a National Assembly was duly constituted. And Dr. Kwame Nkrumah was then made leader of government, business, and the house. That was the beginning of independence. As leader of government, business in 51, fast forward in 52, the General Assembly had the mandate of the Queen to elect a prime minister to lay a foundation for independence. And who was elected prime minister on 21st March 1952? It was Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. It was after that election, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah tabled what is known as the motion of destiny in the National Assembly. The motion of destiny was, and it was contained in the motion of destiny, that be it removed this day, that the black people of the British colony of the Gold Coast will rule themselves, for we have what it takes to control our own affairs. This was what was contained in the motion. And so it was from there, in 52, the whole issue started. A lot of it we can't talk about because of time constraint, until independence was eventually granted the green light in 56, and it came to practical, you know, public celebration in 1957 on the eve of the 5th of March. But then, let us realize that even after declaration of independence, Ghana was not fully, was not a republic. We are still under the Queen. We are still under the Queen, represented by Sir Charles Aden Clark. And so it was not until July 1st, 1960 that we became a republic and accordingly commemorated fame. Now, most importantly, in just 2 minutes, you realize then that after all of this, the fight against Nkrumah and his building of the motorway, laying an industrial foundation for not just political emancipation but also economic emancipation, leading to the formation of about 15 factories, which we'll talk about another day, including the glass factory, car type factory, even matches was being produced at Kedik. Okay. All of that happened. So at the end of the day, if this is the smooth flow of history, it makes sense that the credit for the independence of this country is entirely Nkrumah's. That does not mean we do not recognize the supportive role of other people. And to conclude on this contribution of J.B. Duncan and Nkrumah contrast, which I am particularly not interested in, we are not arguing. Proponents of this argument in favor of Nkrumah don't say J.B. Duncan hasn't done anything. He has also contributed in a number of ways. Remember the Watson Committee inquiry, Commission of Inquiry, described him as a doyen of African politics because of a number of activism he did, including proposing that the establishment of a one external campus of University of London in Nigeria was enough for the entire Africa. He disagreed and advocated for the establishment of a University College of Gold Coast here, which has become, you know, the University of Ghana. So he has also contributed, apart from the UGCC issues, and we can praise him for that, but he cannot be replaced with the undebatable and unquestioned role of Nkrumah. As for the revelations contained in the Great Deception and the others, another day when you give us a platform, we're going to educate viewership on that.
Okay, so let's take a very brief break. We'll be right back.
Are you put off by the very low standards that most accommodation facilities offer?
Well, it's time to heave a heavy sigh of relief.
Colindale's Court is here. Located at Birch Street, Community 12, off the Tema Motorway, Colindale Court offers you top-of-the-range short and long-stay accommodation steeped in luxury.
Our two-bedroom apartment is what you and the family need for your weekend getaway, while our one-bedroom apartment gives you a peaceful ambience to work from home.
Our rooms are fully furnished, air-conditioned, and come with all you need at your beck and call. A well-stocked kitchen, dining area, Wi-Fi, DSTV, Netflix access, and an endless list of other amenities, thus creating a unique sense of place far exceeding your expectations.
Our gym and swimming pool exactly suit your preference for keeping fit and recreational activity. We also have a very spacious conference room for your business meetings.
Colindale Court offers even more. Arif Toba is a thing of scenic beauty, giving you and your loved ones a bubbly night life of music and dance. Call us now to make your reservations.
0243-186017 or 0244-258-332. Colin Dale Court.
Exceptional comfort for beautiful people.
Trasaco Estates, home to Accra's most beautiful and luxurious homes, presents its newest addition, Trasaco Springs, a premium master planned community of service plots surrounded by an exhaustive list of amenities. The gated community of Tema to Accra Motorway presents you the finest opportunity to own a land that suits your preferred size, budget and payment terms. Trasaco Springs is open to you for development. Our on-site sales executives are ready. Call on 055-659-2658.
Suffered to lead his people into the land of freedom. He's a redeemer. And he has labored. He has...
That's on the matter of all talk to you, Alaji and Alaji live on TV, on Pan-African TV, live on Radio Gold 90.5 FM. We're talking about the celebration of Founders Day. Let me hear from Alaji.
Well, you see, Founders Day was just the first day of
school. And it was declared a holiday. And for me, that was very, very significant. You know, when His Excellency John Evans Atta Mills came into power, he thought that one thing that the country could do was to honor the memory of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah and create and establish in his name a Founders Day to celebrate his independence. We worked tirelessly to ensure that we convinced our colleagues who were in the minority that it was proper that we honor our heroes. It was around that time that they came out with this concept of founders, apostrophe S, apostrophe, we had founder, apostrophe S, and they said the apostrophe must come after the S. That was around that time that the debate started. No one had ever, the question of who was the founder of the nation had never been an issue until Professor John Evans Atta Mills came up with the idea that we honor his memory. Then people then came out and said, well, we had many founders, and then we, you know, and it was not only Nkrumah who founded Ghana. Then we said, look, we are talking about leadership, the leadership of Nkrumah in the project. What did he do that manifested our desire to rule ourselves? What did he do? And you will see that up until the time that the Nkrumah was invited to be the General Secretary of the UGCC, the UGCC was cozy with the imperial powers. They were very cozy. In fact, the plan was not for Ghana to be independent. The plan was to transfer power to some select group of people who were either royals or lawyers, or, and the lawyers invariably were royals or rich men's children. This was a plan, and to perpetuate the colonial rule in Ghana through the establishment of a Westminster type of government. That was it. And that is why the MPP has been always in bed with the idea of a Westminster type of government. That was it. And it comes from the UGCC thing. It comes from the J.B. Dankwa thing. I mean, J.B. Dankwa is described as a doyen of politics because
He was a very easy and willing accessory to the imperialists. Anytime they wanted to do anything in this country, he was contracted, he was used to as a fodder to test whatever they wanted to do. And because he was highly regarded in this country, he got all the military chiefs to agree to do those things. And most of the people did agree. That's why he was because not that he had some extraordinary political powers. He couldn't win a seat in his in Chile. He couldn't.
Which one? The one he lost to the
people
teacher?
The one he lost to Kwaswazi.
The people teacher.
I don't know why he was the people teacher. Mm-hmm. He couldn't win. You understand? So the fact is, yes, they described me as a day of politics, and it was an imperialist agenda. I mean, they needed to recognize his contribution to the struggle. It was an imperialist agenda. And so the man who contributed, who fought, who gave leadership, who gave impetus, who motivated us, who made us believe we could also be, who made us believe in ourselves, is Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Why? He didn't need to look far. No brother. He needs to say me. Who am I? Who is Senna? Who is Elvis? Dr. Kwame Nkrumah gave us the reason to believe that we can. Yes, we can. Because we're not royals. We don't come from any royal family. They do commoners. You understand? Fishermen's children. I mean, that's why when he was gathering the people together to try to fight for the independence, they called them veranda boys. That's why. They just thought that he was a riffraff. So we were not supposed to have a role to play. Ghana was going to be modeled on some royal sitting. And so the people must understand that the love, I mean, somebody now says that he's a showboy. Who popularized the word showboy? Kwame Nkrumah. When he was sang to, Nkrumah, Kwame Nkrumah showboy, I want to see you, Kwame Nkrumah showboy. That's Kwame Nkrumah. You know, so, but the imperialist agenda was always at work. No matter what he was doing, but yeah, the brother has told us that we prepare independence with all its dangers to what? Colonialism in servitude or something like that. For us as a people, yes, Nkrumah, at the time we got independence, how many of Ghanaians were graduates? How many Ghanaians were expatriates? But yes, what he simply said was that we were prepared to put our destiny into our own hands. And he knew, Nkrumah knew, that he needed to build the human resource base of this country. He knew. He thought of it, he acted on it, and he actually accomplished it. By the time Kwame Nkrumah left office, the time he was overthrown, a greater number of Ghanaians had received quality education at the highest level. Because he believed that the investment in the human resource base of the country was the way to go. When I heard that the day had been declared a holiday, I was overjoyed, to be honest with you. Because the very opposition to it and the review of the Holidays Act was to remove Nkrumah's date to be celebrated as a holiday. That means the president after 6 years has come back to realize that that man ought to be celebrated. I was just overjoyed. I just said, what has changed? Because the reason why we reviewed and made it a memorial, Kwame Nkrumah Memorial Day, was to remove it from the class of holidays. what a change. So
thank you.
We wish Nkrumah happy birthday wherever he is. He's done well for this country, and we'll continue to cherish his memory.
Thank you. Before I come to you, Didi, Nasir Mohammed says the nation Ghana didn't exist as an entity until Nkrumah put it together. The separate entities like Ashanti, Gold Coast, Transvolta, and Northern Territories were put together to be what we call Ghana. This Nana and his people who don't even want us to have independence now say they are founders. We're looking for traitors. We can leave that to them. Traitors Day. That's coming from Nasir Mohammed. Didi will conclude for me. I'm listening to you. No.
Okay. Thank you.
For the socialist.
I'm just hoping that you will say, well, thank you all very much.
Yes.
And then we'll close.
We've saved the socialist.
Yes, I think much has been said, but to add to it, we celebrate the Founders' Day, and we know, it's a historical fact, that Dr. Kwame Nkrumah is the founder of Ghana, the then called Gold Coast, because we see the remarkable things that he did. And Kwame Nkrumah was a visionary. He was someone who knew where he was taking the country of Ghana to, not just the country, but also the African continent. That is why he called for the Union of Africa, for Africa to unite and to use its resources for their benefit. And the debate about the supposed big sis, I think this is something that we shouldn't prolong it, because writing the history, or the history that is factual, we get to know that it was Kwame Nkrumah who was at the forefront of all the activities regarding Ghana now. How he was able to lead Ghana to independence. And for us to now bring in the supposed five, I think it's something that we should critically look at. For us to erect other monuments at the Kwame Nkrumah Museum just to honor these people, I think their faces alone on the currency is enough of glory to them. But to make changes, to erect new monuments at the Kwame Nkrumah Museum is something that we shouldn't consider to be done. So on the 20th of September, the Socialist Movement of Ghana was out on the street with placards to protest against the revisionist agenda of trying to distort the history that we've known since childhood till now. And these are facts, as I say. Not changing the truth. We have to understand that Kwame Nkrumah is someone who is recognized worldwide and a threat to imperialist powers. The bringing in of Buzia and the others, I don't think is something that we should head for, because they have been honored in several spaces as well. And the day, that is 21st September, which marks the 113th birthday of Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, it should be celebrated well. It should be commemorated well. So on the 21st, the SMJ took it upon itself to organize people to celebrate Dr. Kwame Nkrumah for his remarkable works towards the development and the independence of Ghana, the then Gold Coast, which we had several people talking or hitting on the facts. We had people like Professor Raymond Atuguba and Comrade Kwesi Pratt himself, who laid the facts very straight that Kwame Nkrumah is the only founder of Ghana. And therefore, all this cacophony is about the other big five, and why are they also not recognized as the founders, is something very trivial that we should be thinking of as a country. Because his efforts in the West African Students Union is something that was very remarkable and led him to do much exploits through the UGCC, through to the formation of the CPP, where he won elections hands down, and how he brought on board the people on the street, how he brought together the masses. This is someone that we talk about as a founder of our country. And for us to try to bring down or dwindle down his name is something that we should fight against. That is what we protest against as the socialist movement of Ghana. We need to uphold his name and his efforts, because in history we realize he did great things for the people of Ghana and also across the continent. His impact and how he was even betrayed by this same supposed Big Five, and now they want to share in his praise, they want to share in his fame. I think we cannot condone to such. So I reiterate again that we have just one founder, who is Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. And then we need to recognize that, because even out of Ghana, across the continent, it is being recognized that he is the founder of this country. He did great jobs opening factories for the people to be able to solve their basic needs, to be able to meet their basic requirements of life. His support to the people of Guinea, how he calculated the segregation between the country. At first, Ghana wasn't this homogeneous country that we see. But through the efforts of Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, we see it as it is today. And now trying to denigrate his name, trying to bring the supposed revisionist agenda, trying to revise and distort the history, is something that we should fight against as a country.
Okay, Dede. Thank you. Dede is a member of the Socialist Movement of Ghana. In fact, they are perhaps the only entity that every 21st September, since this whole agenda of Founders Day, Kwame Nkrumah Memorial Day started, actually organizes a celebration of Nkrumah as the founder of this republic. I didn't realize the real impact of Nkrumah. I thought it was a fight between him and UGCC. Until Dr. Percy drew my attention to the real struggle after 1954. If you want to understand the history of Ghana, go and read what happened between 1954 and 1956. Nkrumah had won an election in 1954 that was supposed to grant him his wish of independence for Ghana. Then some forces emerged within this country. The kind of work they had to do during that period will give you a very clear idea as to what really happened. Well, thank you very much for tuning into Alaji and Alaji for today. Let me say happy belated birthday to Vicentia Doe, Belinda Asante, who is a police officer, and also greet Chairman Atakli Banini, who is chairman of the NDC in Ablekuma South. Good morning to you. But let me say a happy, happy birthday to Right Honorable A.S.K. Bagman. He is the current Speaker of Parliament, one of the longest serving MPs we've had. And a happy birthday to you. There's a lot to say to you. Fantastic man when you meet him. Fantastic man. I wish you all the best. I wish you good health as you grow. I know the one thing every one of you pray for is good health. So I wish you, above all things, very, very good health. On behalf of everybody here at Pan-African TV, and also the Alaji and Alaji team, I want to say a big thank you to Elvis Buta for joining us today. He's a former deputy national organizer of the New Patriotic Party. Elvis, well, I yeah, no further comment. But I think the road you have chosen is a tough road. It will get you into trouble. But keep on that road, because those are your thoughts and not the thoughts of anybody. You are speaking your thoughts, not the thought of anybody, and I appreciate that. Teresa Dede Boatin is a member of the Socialist Movement of Ghana. A big thank you to Alaji. Wonderful to see you. At least he made time off his busy schedule, even the heat he's taking in the north, to come and join us. yes. That's why he says the private individual now. And wonderful to meet you for the very first time. Mohamed Suparo, Honorable Member of Parliament for Sisala West, join us today. My name is Sena Numbo. A big thank you to affiliate stations across the country. Thank you very much for providing us your platform. We're live on Pan-African Television, uniquely African. We're celebrating 6 years of
concentrating and focusing on content that is relevant to the African continent. And it's a thing we need to be paying attention to. We're live on Radio Gold on your power station, Radio Gold 90.5 FM, and also on our Junto 92.3 FM. We are back same time next week with another edition of the show. Have a fruitful week. But before then, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Winnie Mandela went to the grave being a member of the ANC despite the ANC ill-treating her to the grave. Even when she was dead, they still did not want to follow her wishes that Julius Malema must speak at my funeral. They still wanted to ill-treat her in her coffin. But she got buried with a black, green and gold flag because she was loyal to that organization. And when it kept on treating her unfairly, she became more loyal to that organization. Why? She knew history will absolve her. What happened? When she died, the young and old woman stood up and said, she did not die. She multiplied, and you'll find her in all of us. So the ENCA broadcasted all negative things about her, said all manner of nonsense against her. It was the young women and all women of South Africa who confronted the ENCA and said, you dare don't say that nonsense about her. Their story changed in less than a day to praising her because she knew even if I'm ill-treated, the day will come where the people will know what I stood for and they will defend what I stood for. It's not about me. I followed a coffin to a grave, drove behind the hearse. As we were moving on the freeway on the N1 and turned into William Nicol, I found black and white people standing on the road. It was raining that day. Young kids, white, black, on the road with their parents. They all stood in salutation. They were waving at the hearse as it was passing. I almost cried on that day because they told me, this woman is hated by everybody. This woman is not wanted by everybody. Our people stood on that day and said, this is our hero. I did not need anyone to tell me about Winnie Mandela. The people of South Africa stood up in salutation and said, we know her. I asked Mwiseni, why are the white people standing here? Because we're told this woman is not wanted by anyone. She's a reject. She's a trouble. They stood and said, we know our leaders. No one will tell us about our leaders, black and white. The road towards a grave, the N1 was closed. Only the funeral cars were allowed on that road. The opposite road, the cars stopped on their own. Heavy rain, they came out. They took out their phones in salutation. A day before, I went to fetch her from the mortuary. When we went to fetch her, as we're coming back in Soweto, grannies took out chairs and sat down outside their houses, waving at the hearse, saying goodbye to their leader. She was never a president. She was never a minister. She was a people's person. She needed no position for her to be declared the mother of the nation. That title till today is not occupied. Because no one gets voted a mother of the nation. It's a title you will never get in any conference. You earn it through your doings in society. You want to leave because you are not elected, the door is open. You want to fight for positions in the EFF, you are in a wrong organization. Do you want to become a counselor at all costs, you are in a wrong organization. When counselors are elected, even 3 years down the line, you are still complaining about counselors, you are in a wrong organization. Because the question should be, is there a red beret in the Cape Metro? If the answer is yes, we're fine. The EFF is inside them. Comrades, we must never, not once, declare amongst ourselves that we are enemies. We are the most hated people in this country. We are the enemies of the beneficiaries of the system. And therefore cannot afford to be enemies amongst ourselves. Follow up on that racism. I'm not asking you to do what I've not done. When a Leninist Marxist tools of analysis, do not use feelings. Do not use your personal relationship to make a political determination. At all times, use political tools of analysis to analyze a political situation so that you are able to identify the enemy. If a random question was to be asked, who is the enemy? Many of you here are going to point at people who are contesting against you as the enemy. In this tent here, there is no enemy. We all belong to the same class and to the same struggle. But in the absence of the tools of analysis, you use functional mentality to determine an enemy. Factions are dangerous because they take your membership of the EFF away from you and then they own it. And when they take away your membership of the EFF, you become a member of another member and you cease to be a member of the EFF. Factions, by the way, also have disciplinary committees. If there is a lady you like and belongs to another faction, and then you belong to this other faction, and you date that lady, that's ill discipline. You are going to be taken to the disciplinary committee of a faction. Oh yeah, we're talking here, but the same people are going out with the other people from the other side. We can disagree politically and still share a glass of coke. There are a lot of people in the ANC who are my friends and who have never supported me. Don't talk about the EFF. When I was in the ANC, they never supported me. But socially we got along very well. But politically, we always knew where we stand. There was never confusion about that. But it didn't mean we can't socialize together. That's why even when I walk with them today, I don't doubt myself. They know where I stand. I know where they stand. Muzwandile Masina in Ikuruleni is a friend of mine. The EFF doesn't want to vote for the ANC in Ikuruleni. It will never happen. We will not vote for the ANC. because CIC and Muswandile are friends, we're not going to use those tools of analysis to determine how we vote in Ekurhuleni. We look at what is in the best interest of the EFF now. What is its strategic objective? And which tactics do we use to arrive at its strategic objective? Does voting for Muzwandile Masina and Ekurhuleni put the EFF in a better position to advance its strategic objective? If the question is no, it doesn't matter how Muzwandile Masina and Malema relate. It will not happen. But tomorrow, after not voting for him, you'll find us together. And when he tries to raise those things, we're here for this other arrangement, not those things. Leave that. It's called political maturity. Let me tell you a secret. Some of the people you have not voted for yet are going to leave the EFF. Because to them, EFF is position. And when they don't get positions, they go. You must never see that as a setback. You are very fortunate to come from a province where there is a sea. I come from villages, there is no sea. When they leave, you must know the sea is cleansing itself of opportunity. Why do you want to go? Because you are not elected? Do we owe you a vote? Is that what you joined for? We thought we joined here to liberate the people from the sheikhs. Why do you make the struggle about yourself? Because whether you are voted for or not, the EFF is still there. Let's continue with the task of joining the EFF. You must never feel sorry for losers who become bitter losers. If you lost because you were robbed and wrong things were said about you and unfairly treated, that's when you must love the organization more. You know, when you ask an 8-year-old child which party you want to vote for, they say the EFF. So when you come here and you fight to a point where you destroy the EFF, you must know in 10 years' time, when that child is now eligible to vote, she will not find the EFF on a ballot paper. And therefore you have shattered the dream of an 8-year-old who said, when the day comes, I'm going to vote for the EFF. It's not about you. This woman who are staying in the squatter camps, when they see a red beret doing door to door, they come out of their shacks and wave and be happy because they see the hope in the red beret. The day you destroy that red beret, you ought to know you have destroyed the hopes of those mothers who are homeless and landless. The domestic workers who get raped every day at work by a white man, and they never tell that story because they know the day they tell that story, they will lose their jobs. And it is that job that stands between them and poverty. When they see the EFF, they say, my pain one day will come to an end when this organization comes into power. You come here and you extend the miserable pain of those farm workers who are paid with alcohol. When they look at EFF, they say, one day these farms are going to belong to us. And through the workers' scheme, we'll be able to make more money and feed our families. You come here, for some reason you forget them. It's about you. And you forget why we came here. So, fighters, we are here to plead with you that do not become obsessed with your exaggerated self-importance. That there is a revolution that must be pursued outside. And that revolution will proceed against you. I mean, without you. There's a former chairperson here of the EFF in the here in the Western Cape, Barnard. Left the EFF to join other organizations. Today he wants to come back. He's extremely pleading. But the constitution of the EFF says, once you leave and you wear the colors of another organization, you will never be welcomed back in the EFF. The national chairperson likes that guy so much. He always says to me, hey, can't there be something like, there's nothing we can do? Don't make that mistake out of anger. And then regret it later. Comrade, democratic centralism means the decision of a higher structure is binding on lower structures and the world membership. Now here, this is the highest structure of the organization in the Western Cape. Whatever decision you took here by the majority is binding on all of you, whether you agreed or you did not agree. But let me tell you, the majority can be wrong. Even when the majority is wrong, we comply and continue to fight from within so that in the next conference, our idea will emerge. For as long as the EFF still exists, you are not defeated. You will continue to sell your idea from within. Stay put. Stay loyal, so that when these ones were elected, made mistakes, people can always say, yes, sir, we should have elected those ones. And then when they turn, they should always find you there, hanging posters of the EFF without a position. You know we are in parliament here. The ANC is in majority. And it makes mistakes all the time with its majority. It's not always correct that majority is always right. They might have won, yeah. Maybe they even bought people. Maybe they bought people KFC and they gave them money and all of that. That's fine. Majority prevailed. But they must know we are not going anywhere. They did not invite us here. We joined on our own. KFC leadership. It will disappear the same way the smell of KFC disappears. Never, as leaders, want to elect each other as friends. Resist that temptation. Because that will be tantamount to killing the organization. When friends elect each other, then they go to that place, is it Kailicha or Rent? They go to Rent. Monday is an EFF day. We require the minutes. In the PCT, there are no minutes. When the chairperson says to the secretary, hey chief, where are the minutes? The chairperson, the secretary says, you know, Musa, chief, you know where we were last night. I couldn't prepare. That's when the organization degenerates and it will die a natural death. When you elect leaders, I know I'm too late because you're already elected. When you elect leaders, whether this person took your boyfriend or your girlfriend, you hate this person so much. Put that aside and ask the question, does this person love the EFF? When we put posters, does this person come? When we do door-to-door, does this person come? When we march, does this person come? Huh? I don't like this bastard, but this guy loves the EFF. And for that reason, I'm going to elect. But this one that you don't speak to, you don't talk to each other. We don't have to like each other. We have to like the EFF. Then that is sufficient. It's enough. I'm electing this person because he might hate me, but he loves the EFF. That's enough. We don't need anything more. Leaders of the EFF, love the EFF more than positions, please. Love the membership of the EFF and execute your task. Because we asked you a question. Are you available? You said yes. We never said, are you available to be a counselor? We said, are you available to be a leader of the province of the EFF? You can't come here and tell me George is too far. What is your understanding of a province? Because we are electing a provincial leadership. Means George is your home. You can't say your home is too far. There used to be a leader of the EFF here in this province. Former leader who said Stellenbosch is too far. And he was telling the deputy president and he told the wrong person. Yes, there's that guy. He holds a grudge forever. Every time he sees that guy, he says, this guy. He says Stellenbosch is too far. This guy. Stellenbosch. What are you going to do with Karoo if Stellenbosch is too far? Central Karoo. There is no corner, all of you are sitting here in front. There's no corner of Western Cape that is far. When we asked you, are you available? We asked you, are you available to go to Central Karoo? You said yes. So why is it far now? Please, yekela ukuthanda izinto. And think that we are in some beauty contest here or something like that. No. We are in a committed work here. When they ask you, are you available? Yes, yes, of course. You think we are here for, yes, of course. The job starts tomorrow. We want 1 million members by the end of December. And the Western Cape must come to a party. This thing that every time we talk about EFF, the province that is at the back is Western Cape, ends today. We're going to have a best-run province. I like your treasurer because I've seen her on the social media taking head on gangsters, taking on hardcore criminals, fighting in the most difficult places. If she can reach and fight there, what stops you? Please, all of us must join the struggle of the treasurer to make the colored areas a permanent seat of the EFF and not isolate the colored community. Stop suffering from low self-esteem and think, no, I can't go to the colored area. You are a leader of all of us. Indian, colors, whites, blacks, Africans, including white people of Western Cape. As a leader of the EFF, you are their leader. Go and talk to them. Leadership must never always want to be received with roses. Go to the most hostile areas where you are going to be insulted, where you are going to be shouted at, that's what builds a character. You know, a sour sack, that black bag that we put in the rubbish bin, that's what a leader is. All rubbish gets thrown at you. You must receive. Don't say, I can't go there. Hey, they insult me. No, that's where we go. Some of us were insulted to a point where they thought we'll hide in some cocoon. No, we went to them and confronted them. They called all insult to a point where they've now ran out of insult. They're done. There's nothing they can ever use on Julius Malema. They called everything. Everything. Including the potions where the sun will never shine. That was called. Everything was called. That's why we're not scared of anything. Not even death can shake us. So leaders, do not be scared of insults and intimidation and threat of life. That's what builds you. That's what makes you a charismatic leader. That's what makes you to follow in the footsteps of Chris Hani and Winnie Mandela and the likes. There were insults were howled at them. You hear leaders say, no, hey, I'm leaving Twitter. Hey, what for? Just tweet and get out and stop entertaining fake accounts that insult us. We don't care about those insults. They do nothing to us. We use Twitter to communicate a message. Those who want to drown in negativity, let them drown in negativity. We have no time for nonsense. We are using Twitter as a means of communication, not as a means of exchanging insults. We have no time for such things. Maybe in the olden days, now we are too focused, Shem. We have a country to run. That's where our eyes are. We are eyeing the Union Building. Imagine you are eyeing the Union Building. You are busy insulting people of Twitter. You will never arrive at the Union Building. See, busy. We are going to Union Building. Our direction is to the Union Building, not to some rubbish that we come across all the time. Imagine when you live here, going back home to Overbeck, every dog that barks at the car that you are driving in, you stop to throw stones at that car. You'll arrive next week. Because there are a lot of dogs here on the road towards Overbeck. Don't stop. They never bark at a stationed car. Once they bark, you must know you are moving. And that's why they are howling insults. Comrades, the EFF here in the Western Cape has got a huge potential. Huge. Do not be scared. Go to every street. Go to every house. Go to every factory. Go to every university. Be everywhere where our people exist. And contest the political space. The EFF will emerge victorious in this organization. Election of leadership is not a point of division. But it must be a point of coming together to reflect from where we come from to where we are, who can take us from this point to the next point. There is no point of hatred. There's no electricity in South Africa. Our people want a functional ESCOM. That ESCOM can only come from the EFF. They've sold everything. Denel is dead. Transnet is dead. Prasa is dead. SAA was sold for 57 rand. There is no smallest part in every plane. There is no smallest part that sells for 57 rand. Smallest. There's no one. They didn't buy the smallest part. They bought the whole company for 57 rand. Daily Maverick says nothing about it because it's in the interest of the Oppenheimers. You must never, ever, when you read Daily Maverick, think you are reading a newspaper. No, you are reading a weapon of the Oppenheimers that goes after everyone who threatens the business interest of the Oppenheimers. There is no media house called Daily Maverick. There's no such a thing. It's a proper, proper mafia propaganda to deal with those who don't support Cyril Ramaphosa. The country is collapsing. There is nothing left that is functioning. The country is looking for you. The EFF, they can't find you anywhere because you are not visible on the ground. You are consumed by palace politics. You will never replace the ANC or the DA if you are going to continue with palace politics. The reason why we wear overalls in parliament, in councils, is because we want to subconsciously remind you that the council must not consume you and you become part of this elite that constitutes the council. You are different. Do not allow palace politics to sharpen your consciousness. Fighters, we are all in here expected to follow Sankara's oath and be the most humble people in society. We must never derive pleasure out of display of opulence. We must never choose champagne over the water that must be given to our people. So, we must make sure we take over for every ward to have a clinic. It's not a slogan. It's real. If you want to know it's real, go and ask those women who are pregnant in the squatter camps, who are about to deliver a baby, an ambulance cannot access the squatter camp because there is no road. A pregnant woman must be put in a wheelbarrow to the main road so that she can deliver. When she's about to deliver, there's no wheelbarrow. She's got a 10-year-old boy. She says to a 10-year-old boy, go and call the neighbor to come and help me. When the young man is about to leave, he says, no, come back. It's too late, my boy. Hold here. A 10-year-old getting exposed to those issues of elders at that age and still think that child will be normal. Remember those people. Think of those people. That a young man who grows up in Langa, in Nyanga, who kills people without an appreciation of life. Because this boy has been damaged from very early in his life. We're fighting crime. We're protecting our women. But we never ask the question, what has led to a situation where this child has got no appreciation of life? Never been kissed on a forehead. Never been told, I love you. Never been hugged because he had to become a man at the age of 10 years so that he can go and look for food to come and feed this mother who has been abandoned by his own government. You are not in an organization because you are bored. You are called by society to come and rescue them. Our society is swimming in pain. We speak here tonight all of us are going to be expected to sleep. There are so many children who are going to sleep with an empty stomach. Tomorrow, they have to go to school and pretend that everything is right so that the time comes for the feeding scheme to be provided during break. Between that morning and the feeding scheme time, the child can't concentrate. As a result, this child will never produce results, not because he's a dunderhead, but because his mind is on, what am I going to eat next? That's the story of a black child. As you sit here, their voices and silent voices are calling upon you to stand up and say, we will restore the dignity of a black child. We will make sure a black child sleeps with a full stomach. We ought to do the most basic. Every ward has got a counselor. Why that counselor can't know that this family has got no single person who's working? Let's stop treating our communities as a group, but treat each family as an individual family with its own circumstances and be able to provide for that family's needs. I went to the Western Cape, not Northern Cape. During door-to-door, I found a woman with a man who's disabled. This old woman says to me, every time this man wants to go and help himself, I have to carry this man to the bush. But there's no toilet. Even if you give them a wheelchair, there is no proper road that they can push that wheelchair. But there is a counselor there who ought to know the special circumstances of that family and to not treat them as a group. That I can hear all of you, but there is this family that needs an urgent attention. There is an old man who gets carried to the bush to go and help himself. Where is the counselor? Where is the minister? Where is the premier? Where is the MEC? Where are these parliamentarians? Where is this malema they are talking about? When there is one family, yes, all of us are struggling, but there is this family with a special circumstance. Do you know of that family as a fighter sitting here? What have you done for them? Except to go around talking rhetorics. These people will not eat the founding manifesto of the EFF. These people will not eat seven cardinal pillars. You are a counselor. You are earning a little bit. Is there a family that is not related to you that you just give 300 rand per month for them to buy a bag of mealy-meal, cabbage, and fish oil? If you can't help one family, why do you come here and tell us you can lead society? It's a well-known poverty-stricken family in your community. You know it. It doesn't need much. Politicians bring all expensive things. Can't you cut down that and the balance of that be shared with that family? They are not asking for more. Why? We want to help that child who's going to sleep without food. It's not true that that family is doomed forever. They need one person who can just come and turn slightly their circumstances. Out of that, a giant gets produced in that family and you change the living conditions of that family. If you can't help the people of Western Cape because you are so useless, at least help one. One in your life. so that when you die, there is this person who cries uncontrollably. And when we ask, what's wrong with this person crying this way, they say, this child completed her doctorate because of the intervention of this comrade we are bearing here today. Let's change lives of individuals. If we want to change the lives of communities and society. It's well and good to come here and stay until 5 a.m. in the morning, but you are not even known in your family that you are a leader. They just know you to be in Cape Town. As to what you are doing here, they don't know. You're not a leader in the family. You're not a leader in society. You're not a leader in your street. What type of a delegate is this one? Because a delegate is a leader. You are trusted by your own community to come and represent them here. So leaders lead from the front. And leadership is action. It's not all talk, talk, talk. Talk is cheap. We want leaders who take action. The little intervention you make and you think is useless, you'll be shocked. One day at the graduation ceremony, when you are sitting there as a counselor chairperson, the person just mentions you in the speech that I am what I am because of this comrade. We must become that. We must not become thugs and criminals and rejected people in our society. But when they see us, they see politicians, and politicians are associated with criminality that steals from the public. When they see us, yes, we are politicians, but they must see community activists that are there to help communities and change the lives of our communities. Comrades, we really appreciate your conduct. We appreciate your discipline. We appreciate your understanding that the organization has got no resources, and the little resources we have to maximize and make sure we hold this conference against all odds. You have made it, and you have shown everyone that it is possible through commitment to hold a successful conference without wasting resources. They won't say it. I saw Atiye. She must go and report that the ANC has been struggling to have a conference in Western Cape. The EFF did it and did it within a short space of time and have done it in a dignified and in a disciplined manner because they respect the people of Western Cape. The conference of the EFF is a reflection of the people of Western Cape. How you conducted yourself, you demonstrated that you are a serious organization ready to govern and take the Western Cape back to where it used to be and take care of ordinary people of this province. We thank the SG and all the deployees who came in here and make sure that this is possible. Comrades, you must never take in this day and age, never take a successful conference for granted. Because a lot of these people get stuck on credentials, not on conference, on credentials. It takes them 3 days to adopt the credentials. So your adoption of credentials, your registration, and the regions that are far being the first ones to arrive is a demonstration of discipline by our own members. We really are very proud of what you taught us here today. We learn from you and we'll take this message all over the country that the Western Cape conducted itself in a manner that is expected from every revolutionary in the EFF. We congratulate the leadership. But before we do that, we must thank all those who led the EFF to where we are in this province. We don't take your contribution for granted. You have led, it's a difficult province. You have led this province. You have made the presence of the EFF be felt in this province. You made your mark. History will remember you as the giants that have led the EFF at a time when it was not fashionable to lead the EFF in the Western Cape. You were called names. All types of insults were howled at you, but you soldiered on. We are here today because of you. This membership that is here, these delegates that are here, are a product of your hard work. We thank you for being loyal and disciplined and for making sure that as given mandate by the previous PPA, you came back to give an account of what you did during your term of office. Whatever contribution you made, we thank you for that. And we hope that you will continue in this journey with the EFF until we deliver economic freedom to our people in the Western Cape and in South Africa. We also want to congratulate the newly elected leaders of the EFF in the province. Those who stood against you and did not support you are not enemies. They are competitors. They thought they can do better than you, and the membership thought different. Never declare those who contested you as enemies. Never declare those who came before you as enemies. The first meeting of the EFF in Western Cape is going to be called a handover meeting so that there is a smooth transition and we show our enemies that we are not fighting. The old are handing over to the new, and the new must take the baton from here and build a much more powerful EFF. I thank you.
Open our floor and to begin our conversation here this morning. Now, we are in a ever-changing global environment. Some might read the news and watch the news about the war in Ukraine and think that doesn't affect us. I'm in Africa, right? But there is a change in world order. And our question to you this morning is, how can the youth position themselves, the African youth, smartly to be able to take advantage of what is happening in this global changing world today?
Right. First of all, the world order will change from time to time, with or without us, with Africa and African youth or without. So we are left with really a simple and a very clear particular choice to make and something to do. Do we want to be part of what influences the change of the world order or not? For me, the answer again is clear. We not only want to do that, we actually must do it. Otherwise, I don't think it's a good story to tell that every time we are marginalized. In fact, when people talk about Africa being marginalized, there is nobody that marginalizes them, the Africans, other than ourselves. Because that's a challenge we must confront. And if we decide to confront that, we shall make headways. So, back to the very point, the world order keeps changing, and Africa, we keep left behind, being left behind. So we must address these problems best, even on the topical issues that were talked about here, the very reasons why there is this summit. The youth will be part of any process for our continent if, again, as said earlier, they are able to find their rightful place. But here, it is not just for them to find the rightful place for themselves, and when I'm saying the youth, I'm really talking about us as well. I'm talking about the continent. So there has to be also that enabling environment, which all was well said earlier by the previous speakers. So the interaction between the desire, the drive, the energy, the need of the youth to take their positions, their rightful positions, and do the best, starting with themselves, but they are actually doing the best for the continent. And then the structures as we have them on our continent of governance, whatever exists in our society, in our politics, all being sensitive to the fact that that interaction between what one side does helps support the direction of the other side. So the youth, the political structures as we have them, coming together, allowing each other that space and interaction, will, one, strengthen us, but to also strengthen us to be able to contribute to what leads to the change in the world order. The world order is being influenced by those who have something in their hands. They have the tools, they have the power, they have, sometimes they even tell you it doesn't matter for them, they are pursuing their interests. Then they talk about doing whatever they are doing based on their values. So you have to take a step back, ourselves, meaning Africans, and say, don't we have interests? Are we really going to be people who have no interests? Or are we going to be people who are constantly referred to as having no values and must be driven by other people's values? I think Africa has had and has values. We have had values before anybody else, if you will, in this world. So again, it's up to us, it's just upon us to be able to do soul searching and look at each other in the eye and say, there is a lot we can do individually, the youth, but for each other, and cover the society of our continent. So we need to just move from these statements and the theories and go to the real life, the real thing, where the Africans, we need to show up, we need to tap into our resources and resourcefulness to be able to be part of what changes the world order.
Thank you, Your Excellency. We do need to keep up. At the UN General Assembly, you talked about that we are now in a digital economy, especially as your message to young people.
Good afternoon, everyone. I know this is a very youthful room, so I want to just do something very quick. Viva Youth Viva! Viva Youth Viva!
Viva!
My name is Ruth K. Kangwandlovu, and I am coming from the beautiful country called Zambia. Over 60% of Africa's population is the vibrant youth between the ages of 15 to 35. Often we've been viewed as beneficiaries and the future leaders of tomorrow, and less of stakeholders or the partners now. My question, Your Excellencies, is how can we foster for intergenerational dialogue and a co-leadership which invests in the young people now to create synergies to bring forth the Africa we want? How can we begin to build trust between institutions and young people, as well as create shaped successes of our in Africa? I end off by bringing out a quote that Namibia's First Lady, Ma'am Gengos, once said. She stated that the only logical way to manage generational transition is to intentionally groom suitable successors to ensure a smooth transition. So how can we foster for this dialogue and co-leadership? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll close that round now and allow for our panel to respond. And I think we'll start with the first question. President Kagame, maybe you can take this one, because again, at the General Assembly, on this issue of agriculture that was asked by the gentleman, you talked about preventing cross-border taxes, for example, you know, and when you talked about the peace and stability even in the DRC. So maybe you can take on that one about agriculture and why there's so much emphasis on an agro-economy as an African state.
I think increasingly there is light being shed on the importance of agriculture, which in the past had been ignored, but for reasons you can't easily understand, because whatever we are doing here, whatever we are saying, agriculture is a source of what enables us to walk, to work, to do everything we do, because it's a source of food. We need that. So if anyone was imagining agriculture is not important, that was a big mistake. But I think every day there is realization of that, its importance. But we have also been helped by the fact that agriculture has had visibility in terms of that not being a source of our livelihoods in terms of food, but also as a big sector of business. Not just food that we eat or we grow crops, and we have different sources of what to eat, whether it is livestock, it is fisheries, and so on and so forth. Now, then we have the land where we have to do agriculture. I don't think there is anything lacking in that, whether it is land or water, or in fact we've been spoiled by having rains and sunshine and in a mix that enables our agriculture to thrive. And maybe that's why people took agriculture for granted in the past on our continent. But I think, as I said, we are waking up to this fact that we need to invest ourselves more into agriculture. Everything is available. It's a source of food. We need the food systems have to develop, have to grow. That's the future. That's the world over. And then, as a source of business, we have seen how people can thrive on that. Now people are going to start producing or have been doing so for many years for export. People can feed themselves and then be able to feed others through that trade and business interaction, that is a great thing to do. And it ties in with the climate change issues, how we take care of these challenges of climate. In a nutshell, the world has come to wake up, and therefore Africa has not been left behind. And I think we are seeing a momentum which we should encourage and therefore be able to do that. So the point of DRC, what was it?
It was just that when you talked about it briefly at the UN General Assembly, because we're talking about the ease of access, right, and the way that we can, you know, do business between each other as countries.
Yes.
For example, even taxes.
Yes.
You talked about the issue of Eastern DRC having to reduce their taxes because of the level of instability there is, you know. So those kind of hindrances on our continent, whether it's political, whatever the case might be, they are those challenges.
Yes.
So it was just to highlight what you had mentioned, but I think you have answered the question, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but that is anyway the whole thing. And now that we have the African Continental Free Trade Area in place,
yeah.
I mean, really, we have to be dealing with production, productivity, then we have the markets, and then the African Continental Free Trade Area is the biggest free trade area now, has become the biggest in the world. So all these are opportunities for us, for the young people, to now switch their minds to something that initially had not been so important, but is more important now than almost anything else. And that is agriculture, and now the market through which we can do any trade that is linking with agriculture or anything else, mm-hmm. is there for us to benefit from.
Sure.
So I don't see really the difficulty, and if the young people tune their mind the correct way and look at all these opportunities available to us, which even touch our own lives, but also touch other people's lives elsewhere, and in between there is a lot of money to make.
Mm.
So what is it that they were waiting for?
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
Wow, this is a very loaded question, but you know, at a personal level, it isn't so much that few things one could accept to take credit for, but many more things seem to happen by luck. But I'm not asking anybody to pursue luck. Sometimes luck also pursues people who are doing things that, and then they are lucky. But given my background, with so much I have gone through at a personal level from the time I was young, maybe from 20 years of age, some of the things shape you. They shape your thinking, they But there is a saying which was not coined by me, but by many other people, saying to walk the talk. What is walking the talk? Walking the talk, I think people are saying, do or practice what you say. So people have to make a choice. We get to hear from people, we learn, we read books, we do all kinds of things. There's a lot of learning through that. In you as a person, you may decide, you make a choice. What person do you want to be? What society do you want to be part of? And you make a choice how you play part in that. You must play part in what you become. You must play part in what the environment around you becomes. Even if you make a small contribution, that will be fine. But you must shape something about you, about your environment. So these are the choices you make, I guess, at every level. Every person makes that choice. Or you fail to make that choice, and of course with the consequences. Things happen to you personally when you've made the wrong choice, or when you have made no choice at all, and just sit back and wait for things to impact you. So the question, therefore, the complex of the question she was asking is both, I think, put it at a personal level, but also at a societal level. And so once you've made that choice personally, and that can apply to anyone and everyone here, then how do you interact with the environment to the point that you learn from what impacts you, but you also learn to impact your environment? So there is an interaction. And so the discipline I was talking about, therefore, originates from that kind of thinking. Being conscious of your choices and what you want to be, and also the choice of the society that you want to become part of. So that has to do with discipline. There is that discipline of mind of going through this process of making the choices. How you are impacted, what you want to be, but also, and that's how it leads to what the deputy president repeated so many times, and it is actually very important. It's how do you step forward and not wait for, that's how people wait for handouts. If you wait for a handout, then that's, in the end, that's what you become. But if you step out and go and do things and ask and insist and, you know, so if you go into politics, like they're saying, from 18 to 25, you are through a process of making a choice, personal, but also beyond you, to the environment where you are. And that's how people become MPs, members of parliament. And I'm singling this out to say, again, to answer the question of experience. Experience means a broad range of things. Experience in what? Experience is not just a question of time or age. It's also what you are doing in that time. For example, I'm older than the deputy president, I think by far. But you may find he would do a better job, or he knows a lot more about interacting with, say, society, because he became an MP, a member of parliament. A member of parliament deals with the people on a daily basis. For so many reasons, you get to understand what their needs are. Then later on, you want to go back for their votes, and that explains, therefore, what has been happening between you and them. That is a rich experience you get over time in that particular job that I may not have even when I'm older, because I've never become a member of parliament myself. I was brought up completely in a different environment, which, even though it put me close to people, ordinary people to work with, it wasn't to that extent a member of parliament does. So for me, the environment was completely different. So you might assume, therefore, that because I'm older, I have more experience, but that's not necessarily true. I may have more experience in a different dimension, but in dealing with these people and understanding their needs and daily, you know, sharing everything on a daily basis as members of parliament do, I don't have that experience. Somebody younger, much younger than me, may have experience. So let people not get confused with this issue of experience. Experience comes with what, with the time, but with what you are doing. Yes, so young people can be seen to have experience, even with, let's say, in our cabinet. And experience background shouldn't be a hindrance. You know, for me, I was thrust into government. I didn't know anything about government. And it was like being thrown in a swimming pool when you don't know how to swim, and you've got, you know, to learn very fast so that you save your life. So that's the kind of thing. But that is showing you that experience should not be an impediment. It shouldn't be. The impediment comes when you have not been having this process of thinking and making choices about who you want to become, about what you want others to be with you, right? So, and a question of happiness is also a choice. Happiness comes from the wish to be happy, but also the understanding of your own situation. And if you are working towards a good situation that affects you, and driven by the incentive of being happy, then you become happy. And it doesn't mean that you only become happy when you don't have problems. No. You can actually be happy when you have problems. Only that it depends on how you understand your problems, and you are able to put them where they belong as you work on solutions. And in between, being happy is the energy that actually bridges this gap between problems and solutions. So you make the choice.
Yeah. Youth Connect Unauliza. You can be happy even if you have problems, right? I'm glad that you personalized it, because I was going to follow up and say, I'm sure even when you entered politics, when you became a leader, you didn't have experience. And I think what we need to highlight is that we're in a generation where there isn't enough, there's not that much room also to make mistakes. Everything we do is recorded. I'm sure if we went back to your life 30, 40 years ago, there's so much that's just lost and gone because there was no one with a camera watching every move and recording everything. So when we talk of the need for experience, it's also because we are afraid to make mistakes, because we'll be reminded of them tomorrow, the next day, and the internet these days never forgets. But we can come to our next...
of the statement that was being made to us.
Absolutely.
Rather than the question.
Yeah.
So we will treat it like a statement, statement emphasizing certain things that need to be done come the climate change conference coming, or issues to emphasize, and so on and so forth. I don't think really there is any question to answer other than reassuring her. Well, first of all, I'm glad she realizes that this is not just an easy process or an easy thing for which you find the solution in one day. However, we have listened to what she has said, and so many like her have said these things very loud and clear in different places, whether in New York at the UN General Assembly or different capitals of developed countries. And it's important that these statements, these voices continue to be heard. So it is our duty, however, when it comes to us in these interactions, in these meetings, in these conferences, to be able to articulate our positions, taking into consideration those points she has raised, whether it is the climate financing or different activities that people think are unfair or result into the kind of injustice that has been so much pronounced. We can only say we have listened, and we have heard these messages before. We understand their importance, and we shall also try to play our part among so many other actors that are out there.
Thank you, sir. I think that's enough for the acknowledgement and the recognition of that. And